You'll remember in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, that as it goes, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, a time to be born and a time to die. And then all the opposites, there's pluses and minuses, plus profit and loss, plus and minus. When you're all done, you end up with zero. You get $3 and lose $3, you end up with zero. Zero. So now, in the light of time is, and we're going through time, which is chapter 3, and in the process of that, there is the unpredictable things of life. There's a time for this and a time for that, and it isn't predictable. That's the hard part. If you could just predict, but you can't. Thus, we may pick up where we were anyway and just read it. Chapter 9, verse 11, five illustrations of this unpredictability. I returned and I saw under the sun, and his subsolar view of looking at everything, not looking up, looking down. I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill. But time and chance, occurrence, that would have the encounters. Time and chance happeneth to them all. There's no predictability. Verse 12. For a man also knoweth not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare. So are the sons of men snared in an evil time, when it falleth suddenly upon them. So here is time, living in time, moving through time, and it's just unpredictable. You know there's a time for this and a time for that, but you can't predict it. You can't say, I know this is thus and thus going to be, because you don't know that. You don't know that at all. In the next 5 minutes, you don't know the next 5 minutes. You can say thus and thus, but 5 minutes from now, something will happen that you never dreamed of. Never dreamed of. Wow. Now, having said that, back over, if you would, to chapter 3. Now remember, in the light of the five examples, etc., the outcome is affected by what happens, when it happens, how it happens. So any given track, movement in history could be altered in a moment of time. All changed from a human standpoint. All changed. Wow. Now, having said that, and we share together that there's time. We're living, redeeming the time because the days are what? Evil. It's an evil time. It's on earth. Wow. And the first civilization ever was formed and started by Cain. Cain is a murderer. And the first civilization is evil. It never got better. Oh, God's going to make a new heaven and a new earth, but never got better. Never got better. Never did. Looking on earth, you have sorrow, sin, sorrow, suffering. Just doesn't go away. Now, having said that, and we share together in Daniel 12:1, etc. Well, we may not have done that, but knowing the time, and God, as you turn the pages of the Old Testament especially, at that time, knowing the time, at that time, and so there's a time for something. But how to get there and how it will be in detail is not understood. And in Revelation 1:3, I would remind you, as you start the book of Revelation, God reminds you the time is at hand. It's very near. So when you're reading Revelation, the history of the church, his church history, Revelation 2 and 3, from chapter 6:19, tribulation, And you're looking, and all of that is in the process. So when John is the penman writing for God in Revelation, he said, this is all presently taking place. It's all unfolding right now, not next year. It's all taking place. Thus, in the light of that, the opportunity to have an opportune relationship to God is very important. In the middle of time, which is passing by, leaving, the clock keeps going, the sun rises, sun sets, and here we are, we lose another day, when we only have so many days anyway, and then the days are gone, sun rises and sun sets still anyway, and here we were here, born, die, gone. Now, having said that, so time, we're made for eternity. Now, having chapter 3, if I may, picking up the thought in verse 13. I'll read verse 12 just to tie it. I know that there is no good in them, but for a man to rejoice and to do good in his life. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labor, his work. It is the gift of God. They should eat and drink and enjoy a time, take pleasure, enjoyment. It's good. It's the time. God gives it. We shared it last time. God gives taste and all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things that we are able to do as humans. Wonderful, wonderful. All kinds of experience and exercise and learning. Wow. Now, verse 13. In verse 14. I know that. And he says, I know. And here in verse 12, I know. In verse 14, I know. I know by experience. I know by intellect. I know I've had every opportunity to do and experience all that I'm talking about. And I have a mind, wisdom, that no one else has. So I can look at things and understand things like the persons can't do that. They don't have that. God gave me that wisdom. Wow. To comprehend pieces and bring them all together. Wow. Now, having said that, verse 14, I know that whatsoever God doeth. Now he's going to look. He's looking under the earth, under the sun, his subsolar position. And he says, I know that whatsoever God doeth, it shall be forever. Nothing can be put to it, nor anything taken from it. And God doeth it. Why? That man should fear before him. So what God does, in the light of time, God does, and it remains, it exists, and every action of God is going to take place in the light of God's will, his purpose, his plan, his permissive will. Everything's going to take place. But there's boundaries to everything, boundaries. And you remember in Deuteronomy chapter 4. You may want to turn there. I'm coming right back here. You have the same thing in the end of Revelation. Deuteronomy chapter 4. You don't add or subtract. What God does, he does. So you either adjust to that or you don't. Now, Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 2, you know. You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish aught from it, that you may keep the commandments of the Lord your God, which I command you. Don't add, don't subtract. Back over to Ecclesiastes 3, verse 14. Nothing can be put to it, nothing taken from it. So when you're all done, God is going to do what he's going to do. God already knows what he's going to do. God has already set up before there was anything. God already had it all done. So therefore, we're looking for God. We aren't going to change God. That's why I'm to come. God, you changed. God isn't going to change anything because it's all done. It's all done. You need to line up with God who has it all done in the light of his grace, in the light of his purpose, in the light of his mercy. You want to line up with God. That's why we want God's will. Because we can't. What are you going to tell God to do? What are you going to tell him to do? What's prayer doing? Prayer is lining you up with God, isn't it? That's all it's doing. You aren't telling God how to handle the next hour. You're looking for God to be and do his will in the light of wherever the situation, circumstance are at. And you're looking for God to do that. And in the hospital, death, life, you're looking for God, God's will. You understand that God already is God, and you aren't going to add, and you aren't going to subtract, and you're going to learn to trust God, and you'll bring God your specific petition, request, and you leave it with God with thanksgiving, and it may or may not be. You don't know that. But you leave it with God. So what? You aren't carrying the load. The load is left with God. So we aren't worried, we aren't wanting, we aren't wondering, we're looking to God. Now, here in Ecclesiastes, verse 14, remember now there's no boundaries, so whatever God does is both complete and eternal, and God has made it so, in order that men should fear to be in awe, to be in awe before him, that they would honor him. Well, why can't we manage? Why can't we make something? Because we aren't in charge. The world isn't left without the landlord taking care of the property. So here, now in verse 15, that which hath been, has been, is now, and that which is to be hath already been. So what do we have? Well, we have everything in verse 15, whatsoever that was already has been, already it is, and that which will be already was. So we know something was, and then something isn't. And verse 15, that which has been is now, and that which has been already, and that which is to be hath already been. So everything is repeated over and over and over again. Humans are the same. Activity's the same. Life's the same. Breathing's the same. So when you come now, in the light of that, in the light of everything has a rise and fall, and it repeats itself. So when you come to the end of verse 15, and God requireth, God is the subject, God requireth that which is past. And the word requireth has to do with to seek perseveringly, intently, to examine, to judge something, to search out. Well, what? God is going to go and require, he's going to search out, he's going to do it perseveringly, he's going to search out that which is past. The past is repeated over and over again. So God is going to search out, require, to search out in order to be required, the past. And you notice, please, in verse, that which is past, and it has to do with that which has been pursued, is chased away, literally, to put it to flight. In other words, people, the past, as you're going down the time minute, the last 60 seconds ago, they're gone. The last 60 seconds are gone, aren't they? They're gone. It's past. And we're moving down. And we try to take the path. We try to hold on to a moment. But the moment doesn't allow us to hold on to it. And we go to the next moment. And things are repeated over and over again. Now, with that in mind, so you have the sense of this, go over with me, please, to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And may I pick up the thought, please, in verse 9. Rejoice, O young man, in thy youth, and let thy heart cheer thee in the days of thy youth, and walk in the ways of thine heart, and in the sight of thine eyes. But know thou, that for all these things, God will bring thee into what? Judgment. You're going to live and eat and drink, go to school, whatever you do, and you're going to do it. But know this, all of it is going to be accounted for. Everything's accounted for. The past, present, repeats itself. We try to move past something, and everything is to be accounted for. Nothing is to be unaccounted for. So, chapter 12. Chapter 12 and verse 14, the end. For God shall bring every work into judgment, with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. So no matter what it is, it's accountable. It's accountable to God. God's going to make an accounting of it, no matter what it is. Let me do it again. Matthew 12. Matthew chapter 12. In Matthew chapter 12, verse 34. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you, that every idle word that a man shall speak, they shall give an account thereof in the day of judgment. All the past, God says, I require the past. You try to run away from the past. I require it. You're accountable for it. Verse 36, 37. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. I'm going to judge you based on everything. And so here are people under the sun, and here are the Israelites, etc., looking, and your righteousness is not sufficient to satisfy God. And you can't use your good works, your good deeds, your good intentions, your good desires. You can't use them. You can't use them. God's going to test them. God's going to test them. Every idle word, everything. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. For us believers, you know, 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And may I go to verse 10, remembering now, verse 9, wherefore we labor, work, whatever we do, that whether present or absent, we may be accepted, pleasing of him to him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body, according that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. So everything is accountable. And thus back over to Ecclesiastes chapter 3. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, and again noting, if I can, verse 15, that which hath been is now, and that which is to be hath already been. And God requireth, he pursues after, to press after something, search out something. He's going to search out that which has been chased away, that which has been driven away. Time eliminates, the last 60 seconds are eliminated, and time moves on. But God is going to require, since the past, present, past, God's going to require the whole ball of wax when he does it. So, wow, under the sun, here we are doing it, trying to enjoy life, trying to make life work, and youth. But remember, God is going to hold all of it, you're accountable for all of it. Thus, verse 16, and moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment. Remember, God requires it, judgment. Moreover, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, that wickedness was there, and the place of righteousness, that iniquity was there. I saw in the place of justice, even there was evil, same word. And in the place of righteousness, even there was evil. And that in every place where you looked for something, there was evil found. Every place is evil. No matter how you cut the cookie, because just think of wherever humans are, the heart is what? Deceitful. So you can't have any humans there. Wherever they are, no matter what they're doing, winning a war, inventing something, working on surgery, whatever it is, God's there. God's there, and it all takes place. And God said, don't you know? Don't you know that there's always evil, redeeming the time because the days are evil? Don't you know that it isn't right? It's wrong. The world you live in isn't right. It's wrong. Thus, keeping that in mind, justice and judgment, we are to look to God. And when we're looking for judgment, justice, we find evil. When we look for rightness, we find evil. Wow. Thus, verse 17. Remember now, everything is looking in respect to justice, judgment. And remember, he observed looking, he's looking for justice and judgment. Solomon says, if you look realistically at the world you live in, you will not find justice and righteousness, you'll find evil. When you're all done, the highest motivations, don't count on them. Heart is deceitful. Thus. And here he reflects, verse 17. He's looking, remember, he's looking for justice, looking for righteousness, fairness, right? You want fairness. Remember, we shared this before. You want equality, right? Fairness. And remember, we did a study on it to remind you. Please don't look for fairness and justice. It isn't to be found in this world. And when you're going around, they need to be fair to me. It's my fair share. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to do that. God never said it was equal and never said it was fair. So, if I can, back over. In verse 17, in the light of all of that, here's his first response. Remember verse 16. Verse 16 says, we're looking and God is going to take, I saw under the sun the place of judgment, the wickedness, evil was there, and the place of righteousness and iniquity, evil was there. So I said in my heart, now here's a response. You're looking at the world around you, realistically, apart from God, apart from God's grace, and you're looking at it. So here's God's justice and the evil in society. What will God do? What will God do with what we're finding evil? It's an evil generation, our Lord said. An evil generation he came to. Evil, adulterous generation. And he didn't change it either. It never improved since then. And thus, in verse 17, in my heart, what's God going to do? Here's his first response. For, in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work. God is going to judge everything, and so here's his first response. There's a time, in the light of a time to be born, a time to die, verses 1 through 8. Here's a time for every purpose, every matter. Look at chapter 3, verse 1. For everything, there is a season, everything, every matter. And then it repeats the word, and a time to every purpose or matter, under the heaven. Everything that happens, matter, for everything, in the direction, for everything. Everything, there's a time, purpose, for every matter, and for every work. There is a time for everything. So I know that God is going to take care of everything in God's justice, God's judgment. He's going to take care of everything in time, wonderfully so. God, I know that about God. God's going to put it all together, and that's true, wonderfully true. Verse 18, here's his second reaction, his second response. In the light of you find evil. And in verse 18, I said in mine heart concerning the estate of the sons of men, that God might manifest them, that they might see that they themselves are beasts. So here we are looking at God and his evil, and his first response is, well, God's going to judge everything. That's true. Well, there's another way to look at it concerning with regard to this, and there's two purposes, there's two infinitives. Two purposes. Let's see what they are. Verse 18. that God might manifest, to separate, to choose out, to cleanse, like taking grain and separating the wheat from the chaff, to prove. God is the subject. God's going to prove. God's going to put them to the test. That God might manifest, prove, separate, in order to test, to prove them. For what reason? That they might see. They might view, they might perceive, they might inspect, they might discover, that they might see that they themselves are beasts. They are just like animals, but they are but beasts. They are no better than animals. They're no better than animals. They just do evil. They're no better. Well, how are they no better than animals? In what way? Verse 19. For that which befalleth, happeneth, that which happens, befalls, that which befalleth, happens to the sons of men, befalleth beasts. And everything that happens to men happens to animals. In other words, all are mortal. All die. Counting on here and now. And that's what people do. We're counting on here and now, and we're hoping to continue to there and then. Right? We're counting on here and now, and we're counting as the clock goes, as we're moving, we're counting on there and then. Whatever there and then is, we're counting on getting there in a human way. The trouble is we're leaving God out, and we are not facing up to the fact that all are mortal, all die. You're just like animals. They die, you die. We're no better than animals, we die. If that's all we have and that's all we do, we're no better than animals. That which befalleth the sons of men befalleth beast. Even one thing befalleth them, as to the one dieth. They all die. They all have the same. All die, one and the same, they both die. It isn't a question of how they die. It's a question that they die. This one dies, and that one dies. And the word die means to stretch out, to stiffen. And you probably heard the expression, there's a stiff thing on the ground. A stiff. Stiffen. Die. To stiff. Become stiff, as opposed to loose, usually. Stiff. Stretched out. But they all die. They all die. They all have that in common. Wow. Thus, that which befalleth beasts is one and the same. So, and they all die. As we said, they all have the same breath. And then remember, we aren't talking about technical, we aren't talking about medical explanations. We're looking at it from God's point of view. How does God looks at life. And if we leave God out, then we're no better off. We do evil, and it is evil wherever we end up. And so God, when it's all done, what do we have? Well, we end up, God is just, he's going to judge everything. And another way to look at it is, we're all going to die. So, well, like an animal, we're all going to die. And so it's an explanation. And in the light of the Hebrew understanding, the Jewish biblical understanding, we're all living beings. And the word you'll notice, please, in verse 20, one breath. And that means to breathe, to blow of the wind, to draw breath, and thus to live, to move, to breathe. So that, verse 19, dieth, and all have one breath, so that a man hath no preeminence, the word preeminence has to do with a lasting benefit. Look over in chapter 1, verse 3. And you'll see the word preeminence, 1 and 3. And you'll see it in verse 3. What profit, there's your word, what profit, what gain, what advantage hath a man of all his labor, all his work, which he taketh unto the sun? Back over to chapter 3 and verse 19, the word in the end of verse 19, so that a man hath no preeminence, no lasting advantage. What profit, what gain? At this stage, there is no advantage for being human. What's the advantage of being human? We die just like an animal. Is that all we are animals? Is that all we are? And we die. We're no better than animals. Is that it? No, that isn't it. But if you're going to leave God out, that's where you're at. Thus, so that a man hath no preeminence, no lasting advantage, no lasting benefit above a beast, for all is vanity. Animals have advantage over humans. Animals die. It's normal to die. They are not humans. God made man in his image and likeness. God made them persons. You don't call a frog a person. You don't call the average ant a person. You don't do that. Persons are different than fish, birds, beasts, animals. They're different. Humans. Animals are better off than humans. Animals just are destined to die. Humans, if that's all they have is on planet Earth and then they die, man, are they going to lose? God's going to judge them for all of their life by their works. Thus, keeping that in mind. And so animals are better off. May I remind you a simple illustration, if I may? Remember in Luke chapter 15, you have to turn there. Remember the father had two sons, and the sons had everything that the father had. They enjoyed everything the father had. And one of the sons wanted his inheritance, and he wanted to go off out of the oasis, out of the father's ranch, if you would, and to go out and out into the world, and that's what he did. And of course he wasted. His riches were taken up because he might have had good intention, but the world doesn't have good intention, does it? Politically, religiously, socially, the world doesn't have good intention for you. No, it doesn't. Think about it. It doesn't have good intention for you. It's looking out for themselves. Everyone looks out for themselves. So, the prodigal son's out there, and you remember, he lived among the swine, and he ate the husk that the swine ate. And he said, I'm not a pig. I'm not a pig. I'm better than a pig. I'm going home. Better home is better than being a pig out here. I'm not a pig. I'm a son of the Father. I'm going back to the Father, and I'll just be a servant. I'll confess my error, my wrong, and if I can just be a servant in my Father's ranch or house, that's good enough. I'll never be a son again. I've ruined it. And off he went. He went, well, because he isn't a pig. He's a human. Human. Back over to chapter 3. Animals have advantage over humans. If they aren't going to be humans, then they're going to stay in the pig pen. So all is vanity. All is nothingness. Thus we have in verse 20. All go into one place. All are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Remember the issue now. The difference is, apart from God and a relationship to God, we're just mortals, and we die like everybody else, and we're going to be judged. So here, verse 20, all go into one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Notice the all, three alls, a clear and direct reference to the grave, to the ground, to dust, to burial, to the body decomposing. Now just hold your finger there a moment and slide your back over to Genesis chapter 2 and remind yourself that animals and humans are all made from the dust of the ground. So in chapter 2, if I may, Picking up, in verse 7, chapter 2 and verse 7. And the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and a man became a living soul. Verse 19. And out of the ground the Lord formed every beast of the field, every fowl of the air, and brought them unto Adam to see what he would call them. And whatsoever Adam called every living creature, that was his, was the name thereof. And Adam was quite able to name every animal accurately, without ever having a class of anything. And thus, keeping in mind, chapter 3, all are dust. Birds, animals, humans, they're made of the dust of the ground. So when you come to verse 19, you understand, in the sweat of thy face thou shalt eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art at the moment, and unto dust thou shalt return. So, dust, dust. Now, back over to chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes. Verse 20. All go into one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. They're all mortal. And they go back to the ground. A clear decomposing of the body. Wow. Now, in the light of that, verse 21. Who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward, and the spirit of the beast that goeth downward to the earth? So remember, we're talking about mortality. We're talking about everyone's of dust. We're talking about breath, 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 breathing, breathing, breathing. And in the light of that, verse 21, who knows? It's a rhetorical question. No one knows the answer. The answer is, what's the goal? What's on the other side of death? What's on the other side of death? Apart from God and his word, no one knows. It's an unknown, isn't it? Do it another way. What about before you were born? Before you were born, do you know? Who knows? Who knows about you before you were born? See, apart from God, what answer do you have? You don't have any answer. You don't have any for death either. Well, we have a Buddha. We have all of these different things. We have our religious thinking. You think you can think as much as you want. God, reason. You got a reason in your mind and rationale. But you know what? You can never explain facts, the realities, can you? With all the reasoning, with all the rationale, with all the thinking, you can't explain the fact that you die. And afterwards, with all your brains, you can't explain it. You can't explain before you were born. You can't explain after you were born. Is that all we are, is here to die like an animal and go to the dust? Or is there more than that? Verse 21, who knoweth the spirit of man that goeth upward? And the spirit of the beast, you see the word spirit is the same as the word breath, breath, up in verse 19. Breath, breath, breathing, breathing. And it has to do with that which has to, well, you know it. Well, let me just do that while you're there. It has to do with that which is, how do you tell someone's alive? How do you tell a person's alive? By their what? Breathing. Don't you tell by breathing? They don't breathe, they aren't doing well. True? If you have a canary and the canary isn't breathing, is it doing well? If you have a mouse, I'm keeping them small, and it isn't breathing, is it doing well? All of them have breath. They all have one common denominator. They breathe. They breathe. Even fish in the water are taking oxygen from the water, aren't they? As an environmentalist, I think we should eliminate fish because they're taking our oxygen. Now, so here we are, and thus, verse 21, who knoweth the spirit of man, the spirit, breath, breathing. Oh, go over, thank you, I meant to do that. Genesis chapter 6, just to do it for you, you know it, just so there's no question. Chapter 6 in Genesis. And if you would, verse 17. Chapter 6, verse 17. Behold, I do bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh. That's animals, every bird, the whole ball of wax, humans. Destroy all flesh, wherein is the what? Breath of life. Breathing. All that breathe, die. All that breathe, die, go to dust. So here in verse 17, chapter 6, wherein is the breath of life from under heaven, and everything that is in the earth shall die. They don't breathe anymore. They die. Over, if you would, to chapter 7. Chapter 7 of Genesis, verse 15. And they went in unto Noah, into the ark, two by two of all flesh. And now you're going to, what do you mean flesh? Wherein is the what? The breath of life, that breathe, that all that go in, that breathe, that are alive, that show they're alive. Wow. And so, in the light of that, back over if you went to Ecclesiastes. And remember now, keeping in mind, verse 21, who can know what lasting benefit is there apart from a right relationship to God about in the light of the hereafter, here and now, but what about there and then? When humans die, they go up to God. When animals die, they go down to the ground. But apart from God and his word, who knows for sure? If you eliminate God and his word, you don't know. Evolution, what's that going to do for you? Atheism, agnosticism, what do you want to do? What kind of philosophy do you want? What kind of religion do you want? What are you going to do? You can't answer the question. You can't answer it. That's the point. There is no answer. God, apart from God, you don't know. And so, in the light of that, keeping God's word in mind and up front, and thus, breathing is a symbol of life, a sign of life. And thus, all happens in time, 1 through 8. The key, verse 9, what profiteth he that worketh in that wherein he laboreth? In the light of time, everything happens. You don't expect it. And everything you can plan, and the unexpected happens. And you can't plan it. You just have to learn to work and look to God. You look to God. You don't look to things. How are things going and not going? You look to God. God stabilizes the heart. If you're looking this way, 1 minute it's up, next minute it's down. Up, down, off, on. Good, bad, easy, hard. Look to God. And it stays right the same. The same. Steady. My joy I give unto you, not as the world giveth. My peace, same with joy, I give unto you, so that you don't have that problem.